Well, that is an old familiar story that we just heard read from Luke's Gospel. I think it may be one of the most familiar to all of us. At a very early age, we all learn the story of the Good Samaritan, don't we? And we all know the moral of the story. We know who Good Samaritans are. They're the people that go out of their way to help those in need. We often hear of them, somebody stopping on the roadside to fix a flat tire for somebody, or somebody going out of their way when somebody is, in trouble. And that is the story. Something that we all try to do with our own lives. But it's important for us to understand that that is not the word Samaritan, Good Samaritan. That's not how they would have heard this story this morning in Jesus' day. You have to understand who the Samaritan was and what the Samaritan represented to the Jewish mind at the time. There had been a long and deep hatred between the Jews and the Samaritans. And this long and deep divide goes way, way back, really to the divided kingdom when 931 BC. So it is a 3,000-year-old squabble that has been going on. The Samaritans were from the northern kingdom, and that was the kingdom called Israel. And the Jews were from the southern kingdom called Judah. And they each worshipped on different mountains. The Jews worshipped on the mountain in Jerusalem, and the Samaritans worshipped on the mountain in Gerizim. There was interracial breeding, and there was pagan influence in the culture and in the worship. In 587 BC, the Babylonians came in from the west and conquered Judah, sacked Jerusalem, and tore down the temple, wiped it clean, and took all of the Jews to Babylon with them. When they returned several generations later, the Samaritans were still up there doing their thing, and they returned to the same squabble that was there before. This time, the Samaritans claiming that the Babylonian exile was an opportunity to further taint the Jewish faith. And the Samaritans claimed that they were the true descendants of Abraham and Moses and the rightful inheritors of the promised land and of the religion. So you see, this goes back to the beginning. Even though both groups were related to one another, cousins, both descendants of the 12 tribes of Israel, those divisions continue to this day. In the complicated, mixed-up relationship that we just experienced when we were in the Holy Land between Israel and Palestine. And many of you out there were with us on our trip, and we heard many different stories. But one thing that was very enlightening is that the Palestinians are a mixed group. Not just a monolithic group. And they're made up of Christians, Muslims, these Samaritans who go back, who are interrelated, pagan, a variety of people. They're not one homogenous group. And all of these groups seem to have some claim as the true inheritors of the land. One of the things that we experienced is that if you travel from Samaria to Jerusalem, the Israelis today don't travel the direct route, which would take them directly through the West Bank, which is part of the disputed territories and the occupied land. Rather, they go down the River Jordan Valley to Jericho, and then they head west up to Jericho. In very much the same way that the story is talking about the first century pilgrims who made the same journey as Jesus did, would travel down that same Jordan River Valley and avoid the areas of conflict because it was much safer. So it's still going on today. One morning we got up before sunrise and drove the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. We stopped at an overlook to watch the sun come up and have Eucharist out in the desert. It was one of the most powerful opportunities. Unfortunately, we didn't see the sunrise because of the clouds, but the spectacular view over this area called the Wadi Kelt. And one of the things that you noticed is just how far you had come in elevation from Jerusalem and how far you still had to go to get to Jericho. You know, some 2,000 feet in elevation. And we were there looking out over this vast area of desert, absolutely barren, harsh desert. There were a few Bedouins out there who were noticed the bus pull up and wanted to come sell their wares to us. But you got this sense that it would be very hard to live in this desert, in this barren land. And people traveling up that valley of the Wadi from Jericho or down from Jerusalem to Jericho would have been very vulnerable. So you can imagine this story as we read it in a whole kind of vivid way. This lonely traveler being an easy target. And one of the things that is important for us to understand is that this traveler who was beaten and left for dead was a fellow Jew. Okay? And here you have a priest who was a Jew and a Levite who was a Jew, both seeing the gentleman in need on the side of the road and avoiding him and walking around on the other side. Presumably, and we can speculate, to maintain religious purity. They couldn't come in contact with somebody that was dead. Not that this guy was dead. It could have been a trap. There are lots of scenarios that could have been presented in this situation. But one thing is clear is that they did not extend hospitality or neighborly goodness to a fellow who had found themselves in need, which was part of God's law, loving your neighbor as yourself, and the neighbor being the fellow Jew. So Jesus and the lawyer are in this confrontation, if you will, with one another, as the lawyer is trying to expose Jesus further by revealing and asking him, well, even though he knows the law, who is my neighbor? Jesus responds with the story and then turns the question back on him. Rather than answering the question, who is my neighbor, he poses the question, who turned out to be the neighbor? Who turned out to be the neighbor? In other words, can you imagine this enemy of yours, this hated Samaritan, as your neighbor? Jesus is making the point that the God of Israel is a God of grace, a God of mercy, a God who is not just for one group of people, but for the whole world. And that indeed a neighbor is not just a fellow Jew or a fellow whatever, but a neighbor is anyone in need. He seems to say, look, this very well could have been you laying on the side of this road. Would you accept this love and this grace and this mercy from somebody that you disagreed with, somebody that you hated, somebody that you did not see as a neighbor? At the heart of the confrontation with the lawyer goes really to a clash between what does it mean to be the people of God? What does it mean to be the Israel of the world? Because you see, Israel, they are the chosen people not for themselves alone. They were chosen for the world. And all of us have to remember that the blessing of God is not something that we consume. It is something that we show forth in our lives, that we experience the blessing of God by living the blessing of God and by extending the blessing of God. It's not something that we get some of ours and we go and have it and keep it and hope you get yours. No, it's something that we are chosen so that we can share. And that's how we keep it, by giving it away. Remember that Jesus himself was on the road to Jerusalem. He too came to offer something that the world needed desperately. He came to offer peace. And we know what happened. He seems to say here that for those who want peace, I come to offer peace. But for those who want confrontation, there's no escape. There's no end. There is, in a sense, we choose our own judgment when we choose confrontation forever. Jesus came to reveal God to the world. He came to, in a sense, say, if you want to know who God is, look upon me. I am the incarnation. I am the visible presence of the invisible God. Come and follow. Now, I think the same question is posed to each of us today. Do we or will we use our knowledge of God's grace that is so freely extended to each one of us to defend our group, our sect, our tribe, our whatever? Or do we see the blessing that each of us has as a blessing for the world? Something that God has given us to extend to the world, to others, even to those for whom we disagree, even to those for whom we call enemies. Because we find ourselves in a place where there is no end. There is only one option. Hatred begets hatred. Violence begets violence. And there is no human law that can establish peace in the human heart. And that's what this confrontation with the lawyer is about. That's what the gospel, the Deuteronomy passage says. You don't have to go across the sea or up to the highest place. The word is on your lips and in your heart. You know what it is. There's only one law, and that's the law, the summary of the law. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, strength, mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. We can't love God and hate our neighbor. It ain't going to work. And we can't love our neighbor but for the love of Jesus. We're hard to love. I'm convinced that as we look at the divisions in our families, in our nation, in the world, those divisions that tear us apart, we all know them so well, they're very apparent in these days, that there's only one solution. We can choose to be angry, choose to be, combative, choose to fight, or we can choose peace. A peace that passes all understanding. A peace that's offered to everyone freely. A peace that we only find in Jesus Christ. But this peace begins in our own heart. And it's available to all who seek it. So I want to encourage all of us to claim the peace and become peacemakers. Amen.